Okay, I'm going to call this meeting the House Finance Committee to order and let the record reflect that the time is currently 3:01 p.m. on Monday, April 17th, 2023. And I know I'm starting, well, actually, we had a kind of an unconventional day today, so I'm thinking folks will be streaming in here shortly. But for now, we've got Representative Hannon, Representative Stapp, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Ortiz, myself, Co-Chair Foster. I see Representative Co-Chair Johnson is also here. Representative Kronk is here. And I think I've got everybody. So with that, we'll be hearing two bills, and that's House Bill 3, Gold and Silver Specie as Legal Tender, from Representative McCabe, and then also House Bill 83, which is Citizen Advisory Commission on Federal Areas, from Representative Rauscher. And we also have with us Representative Co-Chair Edgman. And just briefly, we've had a lot of meetings that were kind of last-minute meetings today with the Senate. We have the operating budget that was on the floor today. We've got a meeting with the governor at 3:30. We had some other meetings that were kind of scheduled last minute. So what I wanted to do today is we do have our meeting with the governor at 3:30, so that gives us about half an hour. Maybe if we could give 15 minutes to each of the two bills. And mostly what I wanted to do was just at least get the introduction so that we can do bills previously heard and then pick them up at any point, because if we don't at least get the introduction today, then at the minimum, the soonest we could hear them again would be next week. So with that said, again, if we could just maybe, I think what we'll do is we'll get the introduction on the first bill, which is Gold and Silver Specie, and then I think take invited testimony from one of the folks who flew in, and then we'll move over to the next bill and just get the introduction on that one. And also we've got with us Representative Galvin and Representative Colomb. And so with that, I'd like to invite up Representative McCabe and his staff, Buddy Witt, to come up and give us a brief introduction. And then we've got somebody here for invited testimony. So with that, if you could both put yourself on the record.
Thanks. Good afternoon, Co-Chairs Foster, Edgman, Johnson, and members of the House Finance Committee. Thanks for hearing HB3. My name's Kevin, Representative Kevin McCabe. I represent House District 30. I appreciate your indulgence today with all of the changes in the schedule. With me, I have my staff, Buddy Witt, who will do a sectional should the committee wish. So this is a bill introduction for the Finance Committee. It concerns HB3. HB3 does three things. It recognizes Alaska's constitutional duty, power, and right under Section 10, Article 1 of the U.S. Constitution and 10th Amendment of the United States Constitution that makes gold and silver legal in the payment of debt. It secures the rights of Alaskan citizens outlined in the 9th and 10th Amendment of the United States Constitution, allows the tender of gold and silver in the payment of a debt should the merchant or payee agree to accept it, and it brings Alaska into full compliance with the United States Constitution again. This bill takes the first step in protecting specie from borough, city, use, or exchange tax. 12 other states have passed laws to accept gold and silver coins as legal tender. Tennessee passed their legal tender bill this year. Minnesota and Missouri legislatures are hearing it again this year. And as of 2022, 42 states have removed some or all taxes from the purchase of gold and silver. This bill will preserve, protect, and promote the state and its economic security, safety, health, and welfare of the people of this state and protect Alaska and its citizens in the acquisition and possession of gold and silver and their use as legal tender in the payment of debt. We are working on one change with the co-chair's office to Article 5, subparagraph C. We'll be changing, hopefully changing the House Finance Committee to the Ledge Budget and Audit Committee. LBNA is a joint House-Senate committee that meets year-round, oversees fiscal analysis, budget review, audits, and monitors lending and investment activities of the state. It's actually a better fit. It was suggested by Representative Hannon last year in CRA. And with that, this sums up my introduction of the bill. So I will turn it over with your indulgence to my committee aide, Buddy Witt, for the sectional analysis if you'd like, or we can just continue.
And actually, I know that our invited testimony is flowing from out of town, so maybe if we could invite Mr. J.P. Cortez up.
Okay.
And then if is that, you'd like to go and come on up and put yourself on the record, maybe if you can state your name and your affiliation.
For the record, my name is J.P. Cortez. I'm the policy director for the Sound Money Defense League. Co-chair Edgman, co-chair Foster, co-chair Johnson, thank you so much for the opportunity to testify before you today. I'm here testifying in support of House Bill 3. This is a measure that would remove local and local municipal sales taxes from coins and bullion and reaffirms gold and silver as legal tender. As we know, the state of Alaska does not charge a sales tax on purchases of goods, but boroughs and localities sometimes do that. Thus, these sales taxes have the effect oftentimes of discouraging Alaskan citizens from owning gold and silver to protect their savings against inflation at a time of record high inflation not seen in decades and with the backdrop of bank runs happening. Passage of this measure would ensure that there are no taxes, sales taxes, or disincentives to holding the monetary metals. Like the representative mentioned earlier, this would also put Alaska in compliance with Article 1, Section 10 of the United States Constitution. A couple of reasons why this bill is important. The first is that investments aren't typically subject to sales tax. Alaska, when you buy a stock, a bond, a mutual fund, you're not paying a sales tax on that investment because you're holding it for resale. Similarly, when you buy precious metals, you're holding that for resale as well. So a sales tax there would be inappropriate. As mentioned by the representative, there are 42 states that have enacted legislation to eliminate sales tax from precious metals and reaffirm them as legal tender. I am proud to say that there's currently a bill on the Mississippi governor's desk to eliminate the sales tax and reaffirm as legal tender. So Mississippi will be 43. That'll be signed in about a week. Missouri and Arkansas both have bills pending with their governor as well. Those are expected to sign to, again, reaffirm legal tender and remove taxes from the purchases of the metals. This year, there are 25 states that have introduced legislation similar to this to either remove taxes from the purchase or the sale of the metals, to reaffirm them as legal tender, to allow the state treasurer to invest state funds in physical holdings of gold and silver, to establish in-state depositories, and more. So for that reason, and many others, that'll be my testimony. Thank you for the opportunity to speak here today, and I'm available for any questions.
Great, thank you very much. And just to reiterate, we've got a meeting here in about 21 minutes. So what I wanted to do is spend 15 minutes on each of the bills and give Mr. Cortez an opportunity to provide some testimony since he flew in. And so maybe if folks have any questions for him, we'll go to questions. Representative Josephson. And also, Representative Josephson is here for the record. Representative Josephson?
Through the chair, just to clarify, you said this brings us in compliance, but my understanding is just reading Article 1, Section 10, we're in compliance now. We just don't have this system. So it's an option, but we're not in non-compliance. Isn't that a little more accurate?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson. I think that might be a little more accurate. I think that in the case of the constitutional argument, I think you could make the argument that taxes or impediments on using gold and silver as money at least flies in the face of the spirit of what the Constitution was supposed to ascribe. But I think that would be a reasonable way to put it as well.
Thank you.
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, through the chair. Mr. Cortez, you mentioned other states that have moved in this particular direction. Have any of them that you've mentioned moved into the actual process where they're beginning to use this type of currency in regular transactions? And has it created any confusion amongst the business world, business community, those kinds of things in relationship to moving to this type of currency?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, yeah, several states have already done this. Like was mentioned here, this hinges on choice, on the consent of the parties involved to accept this or not accept this. So at any point, if someone doesn't want to accept gold and silver as payment of debt, they are not forced or obligated to do so. But yeah, there are several states across the country that have created the infrastructure to, for example, accept state taxes or taxes of different sorts in physical gold. There are businesses that choose to accept, for example, gold backs, which I think were handed out here. That's used as a medium of exchange in the states where it has been allowed. So there are several examples here of not only states, but countries sort of creating the infrastructure or creating a system that would allow them to eventually transact in gold and silver in a way that hasn't been seen in decades.
And quick follow-up. Thank you. What would you say would be the recent impetus to see this happening across the country? What's driving this thing now as opposed to 10 years ago or 10 years in the future?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, I would say that right now we are sort of living through an unprecedented monetary period. This experiment of paper money and debt financing for the last 50 years, there are gold standard advocates and people, advocates of markets, have been warning that eventually this inflation will come. It's inevitable. It's just a question of how far we can take it down the line before it becomes a serious problem. And I think that states, state officials, state treasurers, state investment groups, along with individuals throughout the state, are waking up to the idea or the realization that paper money is just that. And so people are gravitating more towards stores of value that have been around, in some cases, for in gold and silver's case, for thousands of years.
Thank you.
Do we have any further questions of the committee? Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, to the chair, too, and the wonderful folks who came all the way here from North Carolina to testify in front of us. So I'm curious, you had mentioned earlier in terms of buying the asset, holding the asset, not paying taxes on it, kind of referenced stocks and bonds. So I'm just curious, if I were to purchase legal tender or this type of asset and I hold it for the point of the year and then I sell it ideally for a profit, would I pay capital gains on that? Or
through the chair, Representative Stapp, my understanding is that Alaska does not have a state income tax on capital assets, so you wouldn't have a state income tax. You would have federal gains to declare. But, yeah, yes, sir.
Thanks.
And we'll take up the last question here, then we'll have to move over to the next one. Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Chair Foster. You mentioned that there's been an experiment of paper money for decades, decades would you?
5 decades, 53 years, 1971.
Thank you. And I just wondered, we're waking up, I think I heard you say, to appreciating the need instead for gold standard or silver. And I'm also hearing from youth that we need to wake up to the concept that money now is a concept that's oftentimes could be traded online, and there just seems to be kind of a big spectrum, I guess, of how we look at money. And I wondered if you could share with me the advantages. Why would we prefer to wake up and start using gold standard as opposed to what we're doing, which in this experiment, I think inflation has happened up and down throughout. I'm just trying to understand better what that looks like and why it's so much better, if you could.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, thank you for the question. I think, so like I mentioned, 1971, Nixon took us off the gold standard. The pre-1971 period, barring the war years, the World War years, inflation was zero, largely. There was no inflation. And today, I think official numbers are close to 6 or 7%. There's question whether those official numbers can be trusted. And so it's largely, inflation is a regressive tax that harms the poorest people among us. These are people on hourly workers, people on fixed income, people... savers, retirees, these are the people most harmed by inflation. This is the purchasing power of their money, their fixed income, withering away. Additionally, it's harder to make long-term plans when you're in an inflationary environment like this. So, for example, if a town or a city wanted to do a 10, 20, 50-year infrastructure deal, it's harder to make those plans when the value of your money is constantly changing. It's much easier to make these long-term plans, save for the future, both as an individual and as a town, a city, a state. It's much easier to do that when you have a stable unit that you can rely on that isn't being manipulated, and in some cases, wastefully manipulated.
One last follow-up. Would you help describe to us what the difference is between the price of oil changing, the price of gold changing, and then inflation of goods coming and going? I'm trying to differentiate here because you're making it sound like this: if we just use the gold bars, then we're not going to have to deal with inflation. And I'm trying to really understand that.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin. Historically, it's the case that when countries do resort to traditional gold standards, so from 1933-ish to 1971, there was what's called the Bretton Woods system. It was a floating exchange rate. Before that, the traditional gold standard, where a dollar was pegged to a fixed amount of gold, historically, there wasn't any. It was literally close to zero inflation for 100 years throughout the United States. And so there certainly is movement in the price of gold. The price of gold is a global market, one of the most liquid markets in the world. Prices move on that every several seconds. I think the difference between something like gold and something like another capital asset or another commodity would be all of the different. So, for example, silver is more of a production metal. There's a lot of silver that goes into your jewelry, into your technologies, into your car. And so for that reason, there are industrial reasons why silver might move. Gold, largely what's happening there is that there's this fixed supply and countries are gobbling them up. BRICS countries and some of these other countries throughout the world have been stockpiling gold for the last several years to bolster their treasury. And so there's a different monetary market element to it. Gold isn't necessarily used the way or traded as used as an industrial metal the way other things are. And there's also an acceptance, a medium of exchange. So, for example, oil is hard to trade. You and I would have a hard time as individuals trading oil, whereas countries or large corporations might not. In the case of gold and silver, this is generally a uniform asset that just about anyone will accept worldwide, whether you're in the United States, whether you're in Alaska, whether you speak English, regardless of your background or nationality. Gold is a universal trading instrument. And so for that reason, the fixed quantity of it and its longstanding history of retaining its value for thousands of years, I think for that reason, and there's also the constitutional element that gold is mentioned in the Constitution and other assets aren't. I think for those reasons, gold should be placed in a different category than maybe some of the other commodities.
Great, thank you. And I assume... We're going to continue having these hearings on this bill, and will you be available online if possible?
Yeah, Representative Foster, I'm happy to answer any questions available online at any time. I also am happy to turn in written testimony if that would be helpful to the committee, and from other states or anything else, any other data you guys might need, I'm happy to provide.
Great. Thank you very much for flying up to Alaska, and as I mentioned earlier, I know these introductions on both of these bills are very brief, but the main purpose was to get them introduced so that we can have them as bills previously heard and then take them up anytime. So with that, very much appreciate your coming up, Mr. Cortez, and Representative McCabe, thank you very much. And
thanks for the opportunity.
Have you up again as soon as we can. So with that, our next bill, we'll set aside HB 3, and we'll move over to HB 83, which is Citizen Advisory Commission on Federal Areas. And I'd like to invite up Representative Rauscher, as well as his staff, Ryan McKee, if you can put yourselves on the record. And again, we're just going to do a brief introduction today, and we can take the bill up under bills previously heard later. So with that, welcome.
Thank you. First, I'd like to Representative Rauscher, District 29, for a reference. I would like to thank the co-chairs, for hearing this bill and the committee members also for hearing this bill. I believe it's very important. House Bill 83 reestablishes the Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Management Areas in Alaska, otherwise known as CACPA, which sunset in 2021. It sets a new sunset date of June 30th, 2031. The commission is made up of 10 public members, one senator, one representative who represent the diversity of users and users of the federal land in the state and are appointed by the governor and the legislature. CACPA was first established in 1981, shortly after Congress passed the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act, otherwise known as ANILCA, comprehensive legislation governing all federal public lands in the state. Under the Balanced Compromise, Congress crafted in ANILCA 104-plus million acres on top of the 100 million acres already set aside were set aside in permanent federal ownership as conservation system units like parks, preserves, wildlife refuges, and wild wilderness game areas, while at the same time enabling Alaskans to maintain their traditions, accommodate the social and economic needs of the state, provide a range of land use and land access rights, safeguard opportunities for reasonable resource development, and facilitate continued improvements in transportation and utility infrastructure. The provisions of ANILCA, plus those of the Alaska Statehood Act and the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, mean that most Alaskans are regulated under a unique and extremely complex regulatory web. For the decades that CACPA operated, it was an independent and impartial source of information and center for advocacy on statehood, ANGSCA, and ANILCA issues that impact all Alaskans. CACPA helps Alaskans navigate complex regulations and works with federal agencies to ensure congressional intent is implemented with respect to Alaskans' interests. Among many things, the commission holds hearings to collect public comment on decisions that affects them, disseminates information about historical and new regulations to the public, the executive branch, and the legislature. Information about historical and new regulations to the public, monitors the Federal Register, and regularly submits written comment in response to actions that affect Alaska, and helps Alaskans navigate federal permitting processes. While the state's ANILCA program and CACPA both monitor federal actions, CACPA is the only entity that represents the views of Alaskan citizens concerning federal land management plans within the state. The last state audit conducted in 2020 concluded that there is a continuing public need for the commission. As time passes, institutional memory and ANILCA expertise is lost at both the federal and state level. An active CACPA is critical to ensure that this critical knowledge is preserved and it remains accessible to Alaskans and can be used to defend Alaska. Furthermore, without CACPA, there is no organized center through which individuals can channel their concerns to higher levels of government, making important land use decisions that impact them. CACPA is an essential tool to ensure that Alaskans have a strong, powerful voice in what happens in our state. Right now, I'm going to defer you to my chief of staff, Ryan McKee, who can go over sectional and anything else.
For the record, Ryan McKee, staff to Representative George Rauscher. So Section 1 amends AS 44.66.010, creating new subsection 15, reestablishing the Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Management Areas in Alaska, setting a new sunset date of June 30th, 2031. Section 2 amends AS 44.66.010A technical change, removes subsection 10, where CACFA's previous sunset date, June 30th, 2021, was listed. Section 3 incorporates transition language to the uncodified law of Alaska, establishing the initial term lengths of new appointments to the commission. Thereafter, the term limits outlined in the commission's statute will take effect. And then Section 4 sets an effective date of July 1st, 2023. And then in regards to the audit that was mentioned in the opening statements that was conducted in 2020, Chris Curtis is here and available should the committee have any specific questions about that. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. I just wanted to open up with my thoughts. I think there's a lot of acronyms, and this might seem complicated. You know, there's CACFA, there's ANILCA, there's ANCSA, and there's all the federal regulations that go along with this. But in my mind, and just for the viewing public who are wondering what this is, it's a Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Areas. And to me, where I see the benefit of this is, for example, north of Nome, about 100 miles north of Nome, we have what's called the Serpentine Hot Springs, and it sits in a national park, the Bering Landbridge National Park. And I think it's probably maybe between 6 and 10 miles in inside the park. And so anybody who wants to go there, you know, if you're an elder, for example, this is historically used in historical times by folks from some of the surrounding villages. You know, today, if you want to go there, you can't take your elderly, you know, grandmother by four-wheeler there. You can fly in if you've got the money to fly in, but and the road goes up probably 90 miles, and then you can take a four-wheeler probably maybe 20 miles up to the park line, but from the park line in, you can't. And so the benefit of CACFA is I see that they can help to open up what are called old RS-2477 trails, which are old historical trails, tractor trails, wagon trails, trails that were used by, you know, whether it was miners or just, you know, folks from the villages going from one village to another. And that's the benefit of this. One of the concerns that recently came up was I know that AFN had reached out and said that they're concerned about, you know, whether or not this CACFA would be helping to open up RS-2477s that might go across private land. And in my understanding, or at least my desire, would be that, you know, that's not the case, and that really CACFA is there to help open up, you know, some more federal areas, for example, these parks. And so I just want to throw that out there and maybe help to simplify it a little bit in terms of, like, what does CACFA do? So with that, we'll go to questions. We'll have to maybe take one question for now, and then we've got to go and meet with the governor here. And so, and then, but as I mentioned, you know, we're going to try to come back to these bills as soon as we can here. And so with that, I know Representative Josephson, you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, your comment about RS-2477's conflicts, I think, is a real one, in that I did a lot of research on the Clutina Lake dispute, which is near the Wrangell St. Elias, and the Otner Corporation was profoundly concerned, and of course that went into litigation and all the rest. But through the chair, I have a question. Representative Rauscher, you talked about CACFA having value for the diversity of users in Alaska. And then later on, you talked about the views of Alaska citizens. My principal concern is that CACFA is, I won't say it speaks with one voice, but it speaks, it doesn't speak with, take the Board of Game, for instance. The Board of Game is wholly appointed by the governor. The statute, Title 16, says the governor shall appoint with reference to diversity of users. In fact, it's literally those words. But that doesn't happen. So for example, if one goes to the Department of Fish and Game website, there's a video on how to extricate your dog from traps. So how would someone who doesn't want to have to experience that and wants to dog walk on federal land where there's a management dispute have a voice through CACFA? Or would they be such a small voice in this outcry of concern with federal overreach that they just wouldn't be heard? That's my concern. It's with the quiet user, the cross-country skier, the backpacker, the dog walker. How did they get a voice in CACFA?
Representative Rauscher for on the record through the chair to Representative Josephson. It's my understanding that I would have to say that they would have an opportunity to be heard. I believe that that's the purpose of it. I'm not sure the outcome every time somebody looks to CAFCA for an answer is always what they're looking for when they ask the question. But I believe that you can always bring that to CACFA, and I also agree that CACFA will reference it, whether or not you agree with their decision or not. As you said, as a loud voice, I believe that's, and I think you just brought up that particular case as a for instance, not as a, as maybe you did bring it up as that is the item you'd be wanting to talk to, but I believe they would be able to address it to you, and I also believe that's part of their responsibility.
Great, thank you. And I also just wanted to really be clear in terms of what I was getting at. That is, right now, folks cannot take mechanized vehicles on that old tractor trail to go to the Serpentine Hot Springs. CACFA maybe could help to establish it as a RS-2477 where the public could use that to take, you know, like, for example, a four-wheeler in. So with that, we're going to go ahead and adjourn for the day. Appreciate your introducing the bill, Representative Rauscher. Our next scheduled House Finance Committee meeting is at 1:30 tomorrow, Tuesday, April 18th, and at that meeting we'll return to our carbon bills, and that is HB 49, the carbon offset, as well as HB 50, the carbon storage. And then this week, if we can fit in these two bills that we just heard, that we're going to try to do that as well. So with that, we'll be adjourned at 3:33 p.m. Thank you.